Hi, today is September 19, 2015, and this is Mobile News Podcast number 131. I'm Tato Gasawara. And as usual, I've got my good friend John Westfall with me. Before we begin, go ahead.
We didn't quite get to our mobile. We were going to try to last week record on the road, and we didn't quite make that happen.
But not quite.
We are both back in our respective normal cockpits where we sit and pilot this show. So
that's right.
We are back.
Right. I wanted to give a shout out to, which is something I rarely do, to a retailer. But I wanted to give a shout out to...
Dear retailer, we don't hate you as much as we hate other retailers.
Yeah, well, it's a quick story. I hope it's a quick story. So it's, and it has something, and John will actually find this interesting too. So there's a little company called Sun Valley Tech, T-E-K, International, which distributes Hutu. Electronics products through Amazon. I think John, you bought one of the little Hutu combination USB battery charger / Wi-Fi router / NAS kind of thing.
/ everything else.
Yeah.
It does everything about one little package.
So I also bought one like John, and it kind of pooped out. Well, I shouldn't say that. It worked fine until about 6 or 8 months into its usage, it wouldn't charge anything anymore. The other aspects of it worked fine. It still worked as a Wi-Fi access point, still worked as a little NAS, and it still showed that it could be charged, but it wouldn't charge anything you plugged into it. At any rate, me being me, I didn't actually do anything about it for months and months later, but this past weekend, last weekend, I decided to do a whole bunch of reviews on Amazon. You know, I like this, I don't like this. And I gave 3 stars to the Hutu doodad that John and I both bought. And I said I would have given it 4 stars, except that the battery charger stopped working, after a couple of months. And I figured it was out of warranty, because it's been over a year since I bought it. So I just left it at that. I figured, hey, too bad on me that I didn't say anything earlier. So fine, I left it like that. I got it off my chest. I said... Like I said, it's pretty good, except the battery charger died. I get a phone call this past Tuesday morning, I think, or Monday morning, from Sun Valley Tech Inc. And they're not defensive or anything. They're saying, hey, we understand you have a problem with the HT01 or whatever it is we bought.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually still in warranty. It's an 18-month warranty, not 12 months. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So I said, if you'd like to, it was a lady on the line. The lady on the line says, oh, we can replace that for you. And if you prefer, we can give you the newer model. So we've got an 01. The newer model is a 05. Yeah, and instead of, I think it's like just shy of 7,000 milliamps on the one you and I bought. This one's 10,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a physically bigger device. It's almost twice the size of the original. But, you know, it's got quite a bit of oomph in the battery side and all the same features. Mm-hmm. So, and they said, well, you know what, we'll send you an email and you give us your info and we'll send you out one. Well, they never sent me an email. So I'm thinking, they just blew me off, but at least they made an effort to contact me. A for effort. Like I said, I figured it was out of warranty. I'd written it off. I was okay. Yesterday in the mail, it was delivered to me. Actually, it was delivered by UPS. Hmm. And so I've got a brand new Hutu, thanks to, again, Sun Valley Tech, T-E-K. International. I'm going to do a little blog about it, my personal blog, to do some photos and things to at least acknowledge the fact they not only made this effort, but they made good and something most companies would have either, you know, blown me off on or actually said, hey, why did you say that?
Yeah, that is really nice. It's always nice to see good customer service out of any size company, but the smaller ones, it's so easy when it's a smaller operation to kind of overlook some of those things because you don't have the resources to pay people to sit around and just watch the Amazon reviews all day. But it reminds me quite a bit of the story I talked about last year with Adonit replacing my Jot stylus, even though it was out of warranty.
So yeah.
There are definitely some very good companies out there that, we are, as much as we would like to think, we are not huge names in the tech industry. So it's not like they are, you know, helping us out because...
Yeah.
Yeah, because they think that we're going to give these shout-outs.
No,
it's definitely appreciated.
As far as they know, I'm just another one of, you know, hundreds of customers probably they have on Amazon. And quite frankly, given this this kind of customer service, I would buy again from them through Amazon.
Yep, I would as well.
Okay. Moving on to something that's been, well, I've been focusing a lot on, and I noticed, John, you put up something there too, is ad blocking, which, you know, it's been around for years, right? AdBlock Plus has been out since, I think, 2006. So it's almost 10 years old now. Ad blocking is not new, but this past year, 2015, there's been like a renaissance of ad blocking. First, there was uBlock and uBlock Origin, which is a fork by the original programmer. uBlock Origin is a browser, actually. Browser extension that works with everything except Internet Explorer, I think. So Firefox, Chrome, Safari, I think even Opera. And it does a very, very good job. I have an article up on extremetech.com that I'll link in the show notes. It does a very good job, and one of the neat things about it is, you know, you don't have to punish the sites you like. So when you go to extremetech.com, and if you're using uBlock Origin, you can just unclick ad blocking for that site. And and even if you do have it on, if the ads are well behaved, it lets it through. So it's not a 100%, you know, blocker. Unless you wanted to, you can block everything. And more importantly, it has a list of malware or malvertising kind of sites, and it just blocks those outright. It won't even let you see those sites. So, and presumably the banners associated with them, because, you know, some legit sites have been attacked through these things. I also wrote, and speaking of AdBlock Plus, they in the past week or two, I think, released a standalone product, not a browser extension. It's called AdBlock Browser for free for Android and iOS. And it also does a very, very good job of controlling what you see. And it also lets some things through. It's not a 100% blocker. AdBlock Plus, the extension, is a little bit controversial to some people because they actually have something called acceptable ads or something like that, where companies can pay them to let their ads go through. Mm-hmm. But these ads are actually not, you know, the real annoying ones, the ones that flash at you and play videos. So I'm kind of okay with that model. I don't see a problem with it. Other people do. And you added something to show notes that actually I was going to be talking about in part three of my ad blocking for the masses series and Extreme Tech. So why don't you go ahead and talk about that.
iOS 9, which just dropped officially this week, has built-in support for Safari. I believe it's referred to as content extensions or content blocking. Yeah, if you go into settings and then you go to Safari, you'll see now on iOS 9 there's this thing called content blockers. Right. And you can install apps that block content. And this is also coming to Safari on El Capitan when we all upgrade to that. Yep. So I was looking at this on Thursday, and I was just kind of thinking, well, gee, maybe I'll buy one of these and try it. And I had heard someone talk about the number one app at that point was an app called Peace, which was written by one of the first big lead programmer at Tumblr, Marco Arment. He also writes Overcast, which is the podcast client that I use on iOS. So I thought about that, and then I also saw there was an app called Purify, and there's like three or four others out there.
In the moment
I wasn't thinking too much, so I bought Purify because it was number one at that point. And then about a day later, Marco Arment decides to pull Peace, his ad blocker. Saying it just doesn't feel right to him to, you know, put this out there, and, you know, kind of writes up a blog post about it, bringing up, I guess, what has been on his mind. Now, I thought about this, and I thought, well, okay, if that's where he came from, although I did have a friend on Facebook who was much more cynical and said, well, he decided to write something, he made a bunch of money, and then he pulled it a couple days later just so he wouldn't have to maintain it, and... You know, much more of the cynic view of why he pulled the app.
So he is offering a refund, though.
That is true, although the refund process is not something that many will probably take him up on, because if you bought it, you still have it on your device.
Right.
And you can still re-download it. There's no new sales when you yank it off of the App Store. So
There's no updates. And at some point, I guess it'll stop working. I'm not sure why it will, but... Or it will...
No, probably... iOS 10 or something will break it.
Yeah.
Now, so I don't know really how to feel about that. So ever since we talked about uBlock about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I installed it on one of my computers, and I've been running it on there, and I didn't install it on another. And I really haven't found my experience to be any better on one computer than the other. I mean, I guess I've gotten so good at screening out ads, or maybe I don't see – maybe I don't go to the sites that have the really annoying ads. That's probably more likely.
Yeah.
So I'm still kind of figuring out how this is going to affect kind of the world. I don't know how many people are really using ad blocking, even though it's the number one paid app right now, that type of classification on the iOS App Store.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how – there are certainly people out there that think this is doomsday for free content on the web.
Right.
But I don't know if it's that bad.
Yeah, I think Leo Laporte is calling it adblockopolis, popolit, whatever. One of those kind of words. But let me clarify a couple of things. So first of all, actually, if you go into the iOS 9 settings, you will not see the content blocker option unless you actually download a content blocker. I found that out the hard way, kind of squinting my eyes. And, you know, scrolling up, and where is this content blocker option? But if you look at the documentation, yeah, you got to actually download one first. So the first thing I downloaded was Crystal because it was free. It is no longer free, by the way. When they said limited, they meant limited. It was free for like one day. But anyway, I tested it. It didn't seem to be doing what I wanted it to do, so, or I thought it should do. So then I noticed Peace, and I said, what the heck is this, and why is it number one? And I noticed who wrote it, and as you said, you know, Marco Armont is very well known. He was not only the chief technical officer of Tumblr, and you know, like you said, he developed the Overcast podcast app, which I should probably switch to because I hate the iOS 9 podcast app so much now. But in any case, you know, he's a well-known developer, you know, well-known for doing very good work. And so I paid my, I think it was $2.99 or $3.99, which I thought was kind of expensive, but hey, if it works, it works, right? And that article I was writing, so I figured, what the heck, it's part of the process. And quite frankly, it works very well. I thought it worked better than Crystal. I haven't tried Crystal. So they did update. Maybe it fixed a few of the things I saw. The problem Marco has or had with his own app is that it blocks everything. And there is no on-off toggle like uBlock Origin, where you per site saying, this one let the ads through, this one don't. And also uBlock Origin can actually block certain things and not others. So it's very tunable, very tweakable. And whereas his is all or nothing. And I think that was his problem, where, you know, he felt he was punishing websites that didn't deserve to be punished. And by punished, I mean, you know, not getting their ad money. And I can understand that. I can respect that.
I can get that, too. And the app that I bought, Purify, does have a whitelist feature in it, just like uBlock Origin has. Yeah. The only thing that I kind of take Marco to task with is... he's programming this. He's a capable programmer.
Yeah.
He could build in a whitelist rather easily. And if he really felt like it, use something like publicly available Alexa ranks and say, you know, if you have a ranking above this on Alexa, you are a big site. You are making a decent amount of money. Mm. We can block you. And if you're below this rank, then you're one of the little guys and we won't block you.
Well, that's an interesting idea. Yeah.
That you could do something like that if you felt like you were being... too harsh. I mean, of course, granted, the sites, this is one thing I was thinking was kind of weird. The only sites that really bother me with their ads, ironically, are websites that have lyrics to songs. You go to look up a song lyric and you can't view it on your mobile device because 800 pop-ups pop up and everything else. That's why I think now Google has started throwing song lyrics. If you do a search for a lot of popular songs and say lyrics at the end, Google will just show you the lyrics on the results page. Yeah.
Well, you know, for me, what I wrote in my, I think, part two of my article for the AdBlock browser for iOS and Android is that I use Google. I know you're an iPhone only user, but I switch between Android and iPhone within the day because I have both phones on me. And Google now presents me with a lot of interesting news items, right? Technical news, regular news, entertainment news, whatever. Things that I might be interested in, but half the time I have no idea what these sources are. And I'm always kind of afraid to click on them, even on a mobile device, you know? But with AdBlock browser running on my Android device, and I have it now set for it to be the default browser when I click on a link in Google Now, I feel a lot safer about, you know, what I'm going to see. In terms of, you know, potential malware or malvertising kind of attack or just really annoying ads. So and then after I look at the site and if it's something a site I think I'm going to revisit, you know, I can go into, I can I haven't really looked at how Adblock browser works, but I could probably just whitelist that site and you say, okay, this is a valuable site to me and I'm going to go back to it. So I'm going to let your advertising through. And that's how I use it.
It's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought about Google Now and the sources that it grabs. I was thinking about iOS 9 with the new news app that I've set up and have started playing around with a little bit.
Me too.
I take it that in the past you've worried that perhaps Google's curation might not be as stringent, or because I hadn't even thought about with Apple News to say, oh, I don't know where these are going, because it seems like the curation is a bit more stringent on Apple News.
Well, to be perfectly honest, you know, I would say about half the, literally half the sites I recognize, you know, so it'll be, you know, I don't know, PC Mag or something like that, something I'm pretty sure it will be safe to go to and whose ads I think will be pretty reasonable. You know, I won't be sitting there at a million pop-ups on my little Android device. But there are some that go, Times of what? What country is this? How do you spell that? And that's the time. And, you know, but it's a really compelling, you know, they might have like, I saw some talk about the iPad Air 3 article, speculation. I wanted to read that because that's something I'm interested in. But I wasn't quite sure what that site was. So I was really glad to be able to click on it and have it go through Adblock browser and deal with it that way.
Yeah, and I opened up the news app just now and I'm looking at it, and because you tell both what sources you want and also what groups, every ad that I'm looking at in the For You section of news, I know these sites.
Yeah, I know BuzzFeed, what you mean.
CNN, New York Times, Wired.
Right. That Apple pre-curates for you. And then you select from that pre-curated list, so it's generally speaking, it's probably sites you already are familiar with anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting difference in approaches between the two companies.
Yeah, so before we leave this topic, you know, so I got a kind of a testy Twitter tweet at me from a company who will remain nameless, saying, hey, you know, you can't block ads. Ads are the lifeblood of you know, free news and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And you know what? The person's right. I don't know if it's he or she.
Tell me you blocked their Twitter account, though. That'd be really funny.
No. Ironic. I didn't block Twitter account. It's a valid statement, and I'm going to address it, actually, in part three of my article series. But this is my thought. You know, I have not blocked ads all of this time for, you know, and I've been using the internet since before it was called the internet, quite literally, back when, you know, I was on a military site and it was called MilNet and ARPANET was the civilian side. So, of course, back then there were no ads because it wasn't allowed. But you know what I mean? I've been at this game for a long time. So, you know, the fact I'm using it now is because I've become so irritated by those random sites that I sometimes will see in Google News. You know, or Google Now, either way, that it's like, oh, I really want to read this article, but I'm really kind of frightened to click on this link, because not because it's malicious, but because the ads might just pop at me, you know, like the song lyrics thing you mentioned.
Oh yeah.
And this is a way for me to help control that, and then decide, and then to curate the site after I decide, is this site valuable enough to see what it does to me if I don't block it?
Think about it this way. Most of the ad blockers don't block. They block some tracking, but they don't block all. I don't think a lot of them are blocking Google Analytics, for example.
uBlock Origin actually can. It can block everything if you want.
Yeah, it can, but I don't think by default it's set to block Google Analytics. Yeah. So by that rationale, and plus we all have access to our server logs. Mm-hmm. So if you are a site webmaster and you notice that you get 10,000 hits on a given article and only 1,000 ad impressions.
Yeah.
90% of your users are ad blocking. That might be the time for you to go, maybe these ads are really turning people off. Maybe it's not, you know, totally them. Maybe it's a little of me. Maybe I should think about what my ad networks are doing.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I was going to lead up to in my little story, and that's this. I think, yeah, it is going to hurt some people. I can tell you that my little personal website, mobileviews.com, where, you know, this podcast originates from, its ad revenue has dropped to zero, essentially, over the years. And not because people are ad blocking, by the way, simply because of the way Google's Google Ads, whatever you want to call it, process has changed over the years, where, you know, I'd make $100, $200 a month from Google Ads, and it dropped to zero. for various and sundry reasons, and that's okay. You know, it's not my primary source of income, but it is a change, and I had to deal with it, right? So basically went from a self-sustaining site, self-sustaining in terms of it would pay for the, you know, the hosting and pay for the podcast and all that, and now it's basically just a hobby. I pay for all of that, and that's fine. It's not a big deal. But I think that, like you said, if you, Master, notice that you are being blocked a lot, you can do one of two things, right? You can do what some people are doing, saying, hey, you can't see this content. I see you have a web blocker on. I'm not going to let you see it until you turn the web blocker off. You can basically go on the offensive. And some sites are, in fact, doing that. Or you can say, maybe I need to adapt to a new world order. And the New World Order is, if you are really offensive to your users, they will block you or not come to your site, one or the other, and neither is good.
Yeah, and I will point out that having discussions with people who have run websites in the past, and this is not anyone that you know. These are people in other streams, so you don't have to worry about any of our mutual friends doing saying this. Mm. But I've talked to people who have said, yeah, I run whatever.com, I look at it with an ad blocker because I don't want to see the ads that I have on there. And it's like, well, if you don't want to see them, do you think your users really want to put up with that?
Exactly.
I mean, you're telling me right now that you know that you are driving users insane with your horrible ads.
Yeah.
So much so that you won't even look at them, but you'll have others you look at them. That just seems very questionably ethical.
Yeah, and so for the person or persons, again, it was under a company Twitter account. If the person or persons who tweeted me that, you know, it wasn't mean or anything. It was just saying, hey, you're wrong, basically, and I don't think I am. Or maybe not I'm wrong, because I'm not telling people to ad block. I'm telling them their options. And in part three, I'm going to kind of discuss the things we just discussed here about my thoughts about where we're going. And that's this, you know, things change. If you look around the world, Kodak, Lotus, Sun Microsystems, let me tell you, those guys were high flyers at one time, and mm-hmm. they are no longer in existence. They've been absorbed into other things because they could not adapt.
The web world, the internet world, has looked at the traditional media and traditional entertainment industry and said, you guys need to adapt because you can't make money the old way. You're driving away your users to newer things. If we can't look at ourselves and say we need to adapt as well occasionally, then we are nothing more than hypocrites.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I do some freelance writing for extremetech.com. They are, as far as I know, and I know nothing about how their revenue, but they have ads on their site. So they are ad-driven, and so I depend on, you know, a tiny bit of my income on ad-driven website. It matters to me in a direct way. This is not a hypothetical academic exercise I'm discussing here. And by the way, I should thank the people at Ziff Davis and ExtremeTech.com for letting me talk about ad blockers on the ad-driven site. I think that's really commendable.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, for people like me, I have noticed really no big difference running a computer with ad blocking versus one that doesn't. So I would tell people before you get too lured in and say, wow, this is going to be great, I'm going to be able to love the internet even more, you probably will find that as long as you're not going to some of those questionable websites, you're not going to see a huge difference.
Yeah. And this is true. In fact, when I'm in the process of writing more articles, you know, I said, gee, I guess the sites I go to don't have that many ads. I'm not seeing a lot of blocking here. So I had to go a little further afield. It turns out that sites like Entertainment Weekly or, you know, those kind of sites, those actually, even that one didn't have a lot of ads, but it did have a pop-up on the bottom that does get blocked and lets you see more content on a mobile device. But in any case, I think that was in uBlock browser. I discovered that. But in any case, yeah, you're right. Okay, moving on from our little rant, and again, you know, I'm kind of annoyed that Marco pulled his app because it's so darn good, but I understand his rationale, and, you know, you got to respect it, and I'm not going to ask for a refund. You know, I think he deserves some money for something that's probably going to work for me for a few months at least, and there are other options that I can look at. Okay, you have a question. iOS 9 drops. Any issues?
Yeah, my question was if you've noticed any major problems with iOS 9. I downloaded it onto my devices, And I noticed a couple of apps that are behaving strangely that I know will need some tweaks by their makers. Nothing too crazy. I see that you're throwing in something about screen orientation mm-hmm. problems. Yeah, I did see that, and I've had a little bit of issue more so with my iPhone 6 Plus in refreshing the screen orientation.
Yeah.
But I had that issue on iOS 8, so I think that was just an old bug that might have gotten a little bit worse with iOS 9. But in general, I'm pretty happy with the updates. I like the multitasking. I like the other things I've gotten. So what are your thoughts?
Well, you mentioned that I was literally just typing it in. I just started to speak. One of the things I notice is on the lock screen and other times when I'm using it, you know, a lot of times I don't know which orientation I'm grabbing my iPad or iPhone. My lock screen is upside down relative to the password entry, for example. And this is not like once in a while. This is almost all the time, especially on my iPad mini first gen, which may simply be too slow for iOS 9. So that's, you know, kind of a minor thing. More seriously, however, is the podcast app, which I contend is getting worse each successive release.
I agree.
Is now unbelievably bad. First of all, the font is so small, you can barely read it. I mean, at least I can barely read it. I have older eyes than you do, John. And you can't...
My eyes are catching up.
And I, at least, do not see any obvious way to see how much time is left in a podcast while it's playing. And this is important to me because when I hop in a car to go home, you know, I know how long it takes me to go from my parking spot to parking spot. And I'd like to know if that podcast is going to poop out in between while I'm driving. And it no longer tells me that as at a quick glance, at least. You can see it initially when it's not playing, how much of a podcast is left to play, but it is in very, very tiny font. I'm going to guess it's in 4 or 5 point.
Wow.
Font. Anyway, so that drives me insane. It's really tiny, and I have an iPhone 6, so I do not have a small screen, when I hop in a car.
I would suggest you look at Overcast.
Yeah.
It is a pretty good app. I especially like Overcast will do dynamic speed up of the podcast. So on an hour and a half podcast, it typically only takes me about an hour and 27 minutes.
Mm.
It saves about 3 minutes and just, you know, dead air time. It speeds through and things like that. So that's kind of a cool feature.
Also written by Mark Armand. But...
Yes. I hope he doesn't yank it for a weird reason.
What's that?
Huh? Oh, I think we had a slight drop there. So, yeah, I just hope he doesn't yank Overdrive for Overcast for some reason.
Because it's so much better than... Well, anyway, is there a... I think the app itself is free.
Yeah, you do have to pay for some of the premium features.
A little bit of
audio that's one thing that I did notice about it.
Okay. Yeah, John and I are having a little bit of audio problems now, so we're dropping video off our discussions, which means we don't have any feedback when to talk.
We can't tell what each other is doing while the other is pontificating. It's,
right.
You know, the funny faces that we usually make at each other back and forth, we don't see.
Right. Aside from that, you know, the other thing that was interesting is, and I should have known this because I read about it, but I didn't think about it. If you activate Hey Siri on your device, you now have to do a little bit of training. And, you know, one of the neat things about Siri was it was training less. So you have to say, hey, Siri, a couple times. You have to say a few other phrases, like play me a song or something like that. And then it is apparently trained for your voice. Now, at first I thought, well, this is kind of... at first it's good and bad because now you have to train it. And then I thought, well, it might be good because a lot of times when I'm listening to podcasts, somebody will say something that sounds like, hey, Siri. And Siri will say, I didn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, maybe this will prevent that. But what it looks like is that Siri in general is less responsive. I know I'm yelling at it all by myself in a car. People who pass me by thinking, "Why? Who is that guy yelling at? There's nobody driving with him or riding with him." I'm yelling at Siri, saying, "Hey Siri, hey Siri." Oh, sorry for all you folks whose Siri I'm activating. So it seems a lot less responsive than it was.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how Siri. I know that they're working hard on Siri, so it could be the classic case of drop a big rewrite and lose some of the stuff that you didn't realize you had broken.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of training it in the sense that eventually maybe Siri on the phone will be like Siri on the Apple Watch, where you can just pull your phone close to you and say, "Hey Siri," and it will know that you want to talk. So for example, I can do that with my Apple Watch now. I can say, "Hey Siri, what time is it?" And Siri, if Siri is listening, which it should be, although it didn't when I just did that, it will, you know, show me whatever I'm asking for. So yeah. I'd like it if it's doing it to know my voice so that I'm not in a crowd one day and two people over pull out their phone and go, "Hey Siri, blah, blah, blah," and then my Siri starts answering.
Right. The other thing that I'm just going to type it in right now is iCloud Drive. I don't know what's going on with that. So all this time, I've been just using the free 5 gigabytes of storage that iCloud provides. And it has been fine for backing up 2 iPads and an iPhone for me. Because I do not back up photos. I just back up, you know, just a few things like, I don't even know, notes, you know, things like that. But no big files, no photos, no audio, no videos being uploaded to iCloud because I know I have a limit. All of a sudden, after the iOS 9 upgrade, none of my devices will back up to iCloud. And so today I said, well, you know, being the last of the big-time spenders, I'm going to spend a whole 99 cents plus tax a month to go from 5 gigabytes to 50 gigabytes. That should solve the problem. Well, this is what puzzles me. Okay, remember, I only had, I think, 3.7 gigabytes in my free 5 gigabytes. As soon as I activated the 50 gigabyte option for 99 cents a month, you know, a kingly sum, I all of a sudden was using 26 gigabytes of space. Explain to me how that's happening.
That is interesting. So I purchased iCloud Drive storage about 2 years ago. I went for the 20 gigabyte and I paid $10.99 a year for that. I actually was 10 gigs when I got it, and then it went up to 20 gigs last year when they changed things around. Now I am paying $10.99 for 20 gigs, or I could be paying $11.88 a year for 50 gigs. So I've thought about moving up as well because I have about 3 gigs available in my storage. I don't know how you jumped up so high. I mean, I guess you should be able to go into storage and then choose manage storage.
I did.
But it is.
I did.
And what did it tell you?
As far as I can figure, I'm still using less than 5 gigabytes. Because none of my devices will actually back up. So that's not what's causing the increase in storage capacity. Because they all fail when they try to back up.
that is weird. I'm looking to see when my last backup of my devices has been, just because now I'm curious.
Yeah, my last backup was before the iOS 9 update. Which was earlier this week. But in any case, I'll call Apple Tech Support if I don't figure it out in the next couple days.
My last backup was 10:08 this morning on my iPhone, so mine is normal.
Yours is working. Okay. All righty then. One thing I did want to say that's positive about iOS 9, and I noticed, you know, I had planned not to upgrade my iPads because I have an iPad 2, not an Air 2. I have an iPad 2, full-size iPad, and iPad Air, first gen. And I figured, these things are going to be slow and, you know, terrible. But other people have been telling me, no, it's pretty responsive. So I said, okay, I carry my iPad mini everywhere. So I upgraded my iPad mini so I could at least do a few things. Now, none of the ad block or the content blocking will not work on iPad mini, by the way, because it has a 32-bit processor and you require a 64-bit processor to use it. So that's not the reason. I wanted that trackpad gesture thing so I could move the cursor around accurately in text. And I have to say, that is a super feature. And I'm going to upgrade my iPad 2 to iOS 9 just to get that feature because it is so darn handy.
Yeah, and I've used that feature as well. I'm quite a fan of it. The only device I have that's an iOS device I haven't upgraded yet has been my original iPad mini that I use for a few things here and there. So I might upgrade it now that you say it's running fine on yours.
Yeah, except for that screen orientation thing. You know, that's the only problem I've really seen on it. Yeah, it seems a little bit sluggish, but, you know, not horribly so.
Well, you know, speaking of weird upgrades, this last week I took a mid-2009 MacBook Pro that I had. Mm-hmm. I popped in 4 more gigs of RAM, so now it's maxed out to the 8 gigabytes that can be. It's a 2.5 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo, I believe. I actually took a screenshot of this so I'd have the stats right. And as the screenshot will tell you, if maybe I'll send it over to you and you can throw it on the blog, It is running El Capitan. It is running an operating system that hasn't officially been released yet. And, yeah, it's an Intel Core 2 Duo. And it's actually running it pretty decent. It's not, it's, you know, a little sluggish, like you would expect a machine that's only got a 2.5 gigahertz older processor to do with the modern operating system. But still, I am pretty impressed that I am running a modern operating system that hasn't even been released to the public yet on hardware that I got 6 years ago.
Yeah, that is very impressive. Although, you know, I have to say, Windows 10 actually runs pretty good on old. I installed it on a Asus Netbook, if you remember the Netbooks, which had one of the first-gen Atom processors, which, as you know, was a, you know, slow sloth-like processor. And Windows 10 is actually working pretty decently on it.
Yeah, I still have an Asus Netbook as well. It is sitting in my office. I've been running updates on it for the last 3 weeks to get it up to readiness for Windows 10, and I think I will try installing Windows 10 on it as well.
Yeah. So when is El Capitan coming out, by the way?
September 30th.
Okay, so just a couple days away, really, or 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it'll seem it's going to be 2 weeks and 3 days or so, something like that.
Okay, so next up, speaking of Windows, or at least I was speaking of Windows 10, build 10,547 was released on Friday, September 18th. As I said to John before the podcast, I stupidly started to upgrade on my Venue 8 Pro before the podcast, completely forgetting that I'm going to be on a podcast needing up and down speed. But except for that little problem we had quite a ways into our podcast, probably about 30 minutes in our podcast, the download didn't seem to interfere with our little discussion much. I think our audio problems are caused by other things, personally. I think one of our broadband providers probably doesn't like it when you're on Skype so long.
But yeah, that could be very possible.
Yeah. Anyway, the download completed a while back, just before our audio problem started, actually. And it now says preparing to install updates 50%. So I should have 10,547 running on my Venue 8 Pro soon. And with the rumor is that the next drop for Windows 10, the next major release will be in November. Some of us thought it was... Some of us had read, I should say. I didn't think. I read it might be in October. Now it's in November. So this 10,547 is supposed to have some, not significant, but interesting updates. I'll drop a link to the Microsoft blog that talks about it, where they talk about what they've added. They've improved the start menu. They've improved the tablet mode. They fixed a bunch of things. So, hopefully it'll be something that we can really enjoy.
Okay. I will be looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah. I'm really liking Windows 10, despite the fact that something seems so broken, but mail breaks a lot.
I do hear that from you and many other people.
But next up is something else that we've both been very interested in, and now I'm not as interested in, and that's iPad Pro.
That is what I'm interested in, because we haven't talked about this since it's been announced, and I'm curious, are you going to buy one?
No, for two reasons. Reason number one is I'm too poor to spend what looks like will be over $1,000 on a tablet. And honestly, if I were going to spend $1,000 for a new computing device, I'd probably buy a new MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that price. Okay, so number two is actually semi-related to that. And it is, at first I was really excited about this idea of a 12.7. You know, I'm getting older. My eyes, likes bigger screens now. Never did hate them, but I really appreciate them more now. But quite honestly, that is a lot to lug around. And in fact, the reason I don't lug around my full-size iPad, which is only 9.7 inches, is because it's too big to lug around too, which is why I carry iPad mini everywhere with me. So I'm thinking that I will either buy a new iPad mini 4, which is available now, or the still unannounced and only in some people's minds, except at Apple, you know, the rumored iPad Air 3. I'll probably get one of those two, which was still, you know, I still won't lug it around, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do exactly. But I did borrow an iPad Air 2, and I really like that split screen view, you know, where both windows are active, if the application supports it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, this is very handy. If this were an iPad Air size device, 9.7 inches, I have, you know, I don't have a bag to carry, an everyday bag. You know, I don't know about you, John, but I carry a bag with me everywhere, you know, a man purse. And it's not very big because the iPad Mini doesn't take very much space. When I do carry like a 10-inch tablet or, you know, either Windows or iPad, I got to carry a whole different bag, right? It's like, you know, it's like my wife, you know, she has, you know, purses for different functions, right?
Oh, I fully appreciate that. I have a bigger bag collection than my wife has a purse collection. So, and it's interesting. So I've talked about either last podcast or the one before that I've kind of moved to keeping a laptop at work. That is, you know, I'm one of these people that I like using my own devices. I don't like using school or employer provided devices, which thankfully in my line of work I can do. I don't need to use their device. They're happy that I don't use their device.
Yeah.
So I keep one of my old laptops at work. I keep one of them at home, and now I'm just doing that. I had been lugging my laptop every day from home to work and back and forth. It wasn't a huge deal because I live a half a mile from work, but still, I had a bigger bag, and now I'm just carrying around an iPad, the full-size iPad 2 in an iPad sleeve, in essence, with a couple of pockets on the front that I'm able to put just little things I need, like, you know, little pills in case, you know, I need to take an allergy pill or something like that, and other random stuff. So I've been really happy with that. In fact, that has made me even more interested in the iPad Pro, because now that I am just carrying, in essence, a sleeve with, you know, a few things on it, I could see myself being able to, say, go over to our student union and sit there and work on an iPad Pro, where I probably wouldn't just do that with the iPad Air 2. I'd want to have a little bit bigger screen if I was going to set up kind of mobile shop somewhere and work there.
Right. So for you, go ahead.
Yeah, so for me, I'm actually thinking it would work pretty well for me.
Yeah, so for you, really, it's a notebook replacement.
Yeah, and that's kind of a scary thing for me. I still do enough IT and tech support and things like that just on a consulting basis that I don't think I'm ever going to take a trip without a laptop anytime soon. But for day-to-day stuff, just wandering around our campus and going between office to home and stuff like that, it could be very nice to just have an iPad Air Pro or an iPad Pro.
Yeah, you know, by the way, I haven't carried a notebook on a trip in several years now.
Yeah, that's because people don't pay you to be able to fix things in the middle of the night.
That is true.
But occasionally, I still get those calls.
And I'm glad, by the way. But, you know, for me, the problem, you know, as I said earlier when we were discussing it, is this at the cost, at the price that I would pay, because you buy an iPad Pro, you know, let's say I get the 64 gig version. I buy the Apple Pencil, I want to say pen, and the keyboard cover. That's what, $1,100 at that point, somewhere thereabouts. Plus, you know, plus AppleCare, right? And AppleCare price went up, I think. So, you know, $1,100, $1,200, and all of a sudden, wow, that MacBook Air is all of a sudden looking awfully good. I should note, I'm using a MacBook Air 11-inch, the original Mac. Well, I shouldn't say original, the second generation MacBook Air, the good one, the first good one. Right now, that's how I record all our podcasts. Generally speaking, every now and then I use a MacBook Pro, but generally I use this MacBook Air. And so an 11-inch MacBook Air is awesome. I can, you know, even with aging eyes, I can still read the type. The keyboard is just the bright size for reasonably fast typing. The trackpad is great. You know, palm rejection is pretty darn good compared to my Dell. Sorry, Dell. So, you know, if I'm going to spend that kind of money, I think, you know, this MacBook Air has served me long and well. It's almost 5 years old, I think. And it's about time it deserves to be retired and rest for a while.
Well, you know, it all comes down to what works best for you and what you prefer using. And this is actually something that I kind of got annoyed with, and I put a note in our show notes that I have a message for the haters. And by that, I mean the people who, as soon as they saw the iPad Pro announced, went, well, this is just another Surface. Microsoft already did this. People should just go out and buy a Surface because it's about the same price or cheaper. and why would you ever buy an iPad Pro?
Yeah.
And it hit me, some people don't want to use Windows.
This is true.
That's well, the plain and simple of it. Yeah. And it annoys me that we have, you know, people that we know that just kind of reduce everything down to an assumption
right.
that you want to be using Windows
right.
or a full operating system all of the time, and yeah. that a tablet operating system would never be what would work best for you.
Right. Well, you know, for me, it's you know, I use both, as you know, and I'm you know, I carry. In fact, most days I'm carrying you know, both a Windows 10 tablet and an iPad Mini.
And if you so throw a Linux device in there, we're just living the dream.
You know, I actually did move one of my Acers or Asuses to Linux. I think I'm running Mint Linux on it, but and it runs pretty well, by the way, on a really limited system. But for me, it's not so much the fanboy, fangirl kind of attitude. To me, it's, you know, I have a Windows 10 tablet because sometimes I need to run something like R Project. Mm-hmm. Or something just won't run, or I know you can run on a server. I know you run an R server and all that, but you know, something to simplify it where I don't have to log in. But in any case, but sometimes you just want a really touch friendly device, and there is nothing more touch friendly than iPad. Mm-hmm. I've used Windows 8 and 10 since its beta, early betas, and I will tell you they still haven't matched iPad in terms of touch friendliness, and that's why. I think Microsoft, the latest Microsoft Office that's, you know, touch-friendly is coming out on iPad Pro first.
Well, and like I said, it just, the thing that you just hit on perfectly is that we use different things for different uses, different tools for what we need to do, and it just seemed to me very reductionist to an absurdity to say, well, the Microsoft product was there first, and it might be cheaper, so you should always get that. I don't see Windows users taking that same approach if it was a Mac tablet or something like that.
Yeah.
And saying, yeah, I'll give up the operating system I like for a cheaper operating system. Yeah.
Well, you know, that said, I should say I haven't bought a Microsoft, except for this, you know, my lamented Surface RT, the one of the worst purchases I ever made in the last couple of years. I haven't bought a Surface Pro, which I think is awesome, although I don't own one, because like the iPad Pro, I think it's just too darn expensive for what it does. And I know it does quite a bit. I know it's significant, but you know what? I am very, very happy with a $350 Asus 10-inch Windows tablet I bought, which I've upgraded to Windows 10 and works perfectly well, that I don't feel like I need to spend, you know, $1,000 on a Surface Pro 3. So, you know.
Yeah, and for me, the reason I wasn't buying a Surface, I almost did a number of times. I had the finger on the place order button a couple of times.
Oh.
It was because I thought, you know, a lot of my stuff is in iOS, and it's not going to get iMessage.
Well, it's too bad we don't have sponsors, ad sponsors, speaking of ad blocking. But because John and I had a little bit of audio problem, we had to reboot Skype. I'm going to have to do some surgery on the audio files. But we are back. John was talking about haters of the iPad Pro and, you know, Surfaces.
Yeah. And I remember what I was saying. I was just saying that the reason I never bought a Surface was because I knew that I would have to find workarounds to things I took for granted on the Mac ecosystem.
Yeah.
So iMessage and PhotoStream and... You know, I like Apple Mail better than I think I would like Windows 10 Mail, considering things I've heard about it.
It doesn't work most of the time. Yeah, that's a big problem.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So, plus, there are certain things I toggle on and off that I think aren't toggleable in Windows Mail. So, I just sort of think that if you work in one ecosystem and you like that ecosystem, go for the product that fits it. If you're a Windows person, go for a Surface Pro. If you're a iOS user, go for an iPad Pro.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
And for me, it just depends on what I'm doing. I'll you know, flip out whichever one does what I need to do.
And I think it's just crazy that we still, even though Apple has come out and said numerous times, we don't do it first, we think we do it best.
Yeah.
Well, they say they do it best, but, you know, that's what I think. They try to think they do it best.
Yeah.
We still have people that, I guess, just go, well, the first one, you know, you got to go with the one that did it first. I don't know. Pretty much everyone switched away from what was it? The iRiver was the first MP3 player.
Oh yeah, I had one of those. You know? I think.
Yeah, you know, we went Digital Rio, I think, iRiver or something like that was the thing. We went away from that. Most of us are not using a Xerox-based operating system, even though they were the first with Windows.
The Star was awesome. And, I played with one.
Yeah, things like that. So the first is not necessarily, we don't owe them anything.
Yeah, and I should note, you know, I think my dad had a Model A, a Ford Model A, but he didn't drive it after, you know, a while.
Yeah, he might have had other things that he wanted to drive that he thought did it better than the Model A.
Yeah, different brands, not a Ford, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, and lastly is something I'll let you introduce because it's a little bit sensitive and you had some direct involvement. So why don't you go ahead and start, John?
Yeah, I just so I wanted to bring this up, and Todd, I know you had a couple questions, so we'll get to those. But I wanted to thank everyone who reached out to me this last week. For those of you that did put this the two and two together, my day job is teaching psychology at Delta State University, and this last week we had a very unfortunate incident in which one of our faculty members who was not teaching a full load this semester came onto campus and shot one of our other faculty members in his office, and he did not make it, and this caused the whole school to go on lockdown, and we had a very tense Monday, and I was very appreciative. I did know the deceased professor. I wasn't close friends with him, but you know, I'd spent some time talking with him, and I just really appreciate all the support that I've been given this last week, and people reaching out and saying, "Hey, how are you doing?" and that sort of thing. So that was what I wanted to say, and I think you want. Oh, I also wanted to point out that. Two things I've learned. There are a lot of people out there who care about me, and members of the televised media can be just complete scum. We had a couple of incidents where basically reporters were on campus trying to get interviews. Students didn't want to be interviewed. They wanted to try to get back to their daily lives, and I actually had students that they were harassed. And reporters saying, "Oh, you're just pretending to be busy so we don't talk to you." That's real. These are kids that have just been through really hellish 36 hours, and you're going to try to create drama just so that you can get a hysterical soundbite.
Yeah.
It really was repulsive and just downright evil thing to do. So those are the two takeaways I've had of this week. A tremendous pouring of support to myself and the entire community, and I will not watch televised news again.
I can understand. I don't laugh because it's funny. I laugh because so my question is this, and I ask this as a father who has a daughter in college right now, and I'm kind of curious as to know how, and this is kind of weird, maybe a weird question, but how did the technology work out for the students and you and other faculty during everything that was happening? And what I know you have a blog about it, which we can point out to, if you could just put the link in here, we'll put that link in. Basically, from a tech point of view, what happened? How did it work? You know, what are the lessons learned from your point of view as a technologist and faculty member?
Well, so the tech point of view, the only real problem that we had was when the initial announcement went out. Of course, it's going out over group SMS, and so even though our school has set up with a company that provides these sorts of alerts. The very first alert was just an alert that said emergency, and it looked like, to me, at a glance, a test or something like that. It didn't have much else information in it, and it wasn't until about 4 minutes later that the second message came through that my students saw that I didn't see, and they said, "Oh, there's, we just got a message that we're to go into lockdown, and, there's a potential active shooter on campus," and so... That was a little bit of an annoyance because it was that little bit of delay. And I can totally see this as someone throwing something into the SMS system, not realizing they'd hit like a 160 character limit. Mm-hmm. And so it just chunked it into two messages. And the first message was the heading. And the second message that came through 4 minutes later was the actual message. So that's a little disconcerting, but fairly minor. You know, within about 5 minutes, the whole campus kind of shut down and went into the lockdown. Yeah. So that was... it was timely enough. It just was kind of weird. The other end.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, although, fortunately that 5 minutes was not critical, but, given different circumstances, it could have made a lot of difference. 5 minutes is a lot of time for a lot of things to happen.
Well, it could have, and given where the incident happened, the incident happened in kind of a secluded hallway of faculty offices, and I still haven't found out if the way they found my colleague Ethan's body is if someone had found it or if they'd heard gunshots. I mean, this person came on campus, they left campus immediately, it looks like. So it might have, there might have been a delay in there. They think he was shot around 10:20 local time, and we were in lockdown by 10:40. So I don't know how long it took between the time someone found his body and the actual messages went out. But you're right, even in that amount of time, 5 minutes, 20 minutes can be a big difference in time.
Yeah. And as the situation played out, I know you were in lockdown for a considerable amount of time. Were you getting sufficient communications?
We were. Our campus internet stayed up the entire time without a problem. Everyone was able to access wireless web. I was getting emails from my division chair, from my dean, just with the information that they could verify, and they were on email. So if you were, you know, if you had a question, it was answered fairly timely. I was in communication with other professors in the building, so it was. It was basically enough interaction within the community that I felt like I had the information I needed to keep myself and my students safe. There were, of course, Twitter, Facebook, every conceivable social media network was, of course, buzzing. And myself and my students were spending most of our time on our phones, sort of catching up with people. People were calling us, asking if we were okay, and that sort of thing. So at least we had no worry about internet going down or communications going down throughout the 3 hours that we were in the classroom.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, well, not more than interesting. You know, it's one of the things you always wonder about is, you know, what kind of capacity any system has in these kind of moments. I mean, I remember during 9/11, the only website that remained up that I remember was Slashdot. All the major news sites, you know, the well-known news sites were all down. None of them were usable. Slashdot, which, you know, is Slashdot.org, for those of people who don't know, is a very like, oh, must be about 20 years old now, maybe longer.
Yeah. Slashdot should be 20 now.
At its peak, Slashdot, when it linked to you, and your server couldn't handle it, it was termed Slashdotted because it would send so much traffic to a, you know, maybe a personal blog or a little news site that just wasn't designed for tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. And they had designed their own site, so it could withstand that kind of pressure. So I was getting all of my 9/11 news through Slashdot because everybody else failed.
Yeah, and we were very fortunate in that our infrastructure remained pretty strong, and
that's good.
Communication came through, and my students were able to reassure their parents and their friends, and I think that made it a lot better. In terms of how they weathered the storm, at least on Monday. Yeah. And, of course, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays, we've gotten these huge outpourings of support, obviously. Yeah. Social media has been just as buzzing on campus.
Yeah, I think, yeah, if there were my, you know, if that was something my child were involved in, you know, I'd say, you know, just send me a text message every 60 seconds.
That was about, well, if you noticed, and, you know, you know me on social media. I was sending out... I wasn't doing it every 60 seconds, but about every 20, 30 minutes, I was making sure that I was either commenting on a thread that I'd already posted or was posting a new thread. It is very interesting when you're in that sort of situation and you feel kind of indebted to the people who are concerned about you, that you're, you know, that you keep them informed so that they don't worry unnecessarily. So while I was sitting in that room, my first concern was obviously my students and making sure that the 13 of them that were stuck with me in research methods for 3 hours were doing all right, making sure that none of them were too upset or you know, needed to talk or anything about that. And then secondary, it was kind of communicating with the outside world. So, and it was outward communication, you know, texting people, people were calling and all that. Yeah. So I probably only cycled to look at what the current news was every 10 minutes or so. About 9 out of every 10 minutes was spent tending to other things.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing all this information. You know, as you know, as I said earlier before we started, this is kind of a personal interest because of, I know you, of course, but also because, you know, I have a college age daughter, and, you know, wondering what happened, you know, how people responded from a technology point of view, and all of that kind of stuff. Anyway, glad you and your students remained safe throughout and are currently okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was certainly an interesting time in the worst sense of the word, I suppose. But thanks, John. And speaking of worst sense of the word, one last item before we sign off on this podcast. Windows 10 build 10547 just finished, and it says secure boot violation, invalid signature detected, check secure boot policy and setup, so, and I can't use the power button. So I think I've bricked my Venue 8 Pro.
that sounds very similar to my El Capitan 11.1 update, the beta that came through 2 days ago that bricked my old MacBook Pro until I removed a virtual box file during safe mode. So, yeah.
Well, this is a beta.
I can empathize.
Yeah, this is a device I dedicate to beta testing Windows 10. So it's okay. I mean, you know, it's all right. I'll figure out how to unbrick it somehow, and you know, I have other things to play with. So this is a learning experience. I took a nice photo of it, which will go in an article probably some point. Thanks again, John, for Mobile Views Podcast 131 and for sharing your experience at Delta State University this past week. And we will talk to you next time.